become a stone. Trying to become a stone.
Association of Flight Attendants, CWA. The issue in this case involves an appeal from a bankruptcy court order and subsequent affirmance by a district court of an agreement between the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation and United Airlines. I think there are some points to recount very briefly, if I may, the underlying facts as to how we got here.
So we knew a lot of those, but maybe I want to go to one fact just preliminarily. The PBC, PBGC has already terminated the flight attendant plan. What could happen here or in the D.C. court that can reverse all of that?
A decision reversing the underlying opinion that's on appeal here would do that, Your Honor, we believe. In fact, the agreement itself has not been fully consummated because there remains one plan that has yet to be terminated, and until that happens, no money has exchanged hands. The underlying consideration hasn't been provided by United. Also, in the motion to intervene that the PBGC filed with the district court, they mentioned that if the agreement were set aside, they would be required to renegotiate and come back and sit down with United again and try to achieve a different kind of agreement. Moreover, the file under the organization that the United has filed in there, they have a provision that talks to the issue of what would happen if through this litigation the order was set aside. They will also say in that representation to the court that restoration of the plan could very well happen. Also, of course, under 4047 of ERISA, the PBGC has the power to restore a plan in its discretion. And if they haven't gone into consideration that underlay their termination, then of course that would be a basis. It should also be noted here that one of the basis that they have stated in the notice of termination in this case for terminating the plan is the settlement agreement itself and the consideration that was provided by that agreement. Ergo, that if the agreement is now basically not able to be consummated, or can be consummated, then it would seem that the PBGC would have no choice, considering their own decision, but to restore the plan.
Well, as long as what has already occurred also means it can be totally rescinded, I guess.
Well, that is done by the power of the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
And what was the date it was actually terminated?
June 30th of this year. What I was just briefly is that what we're here on began with the second round of Section 1113 negotiations and mitigation. That started 6 months ago, in November of 2004. And after 6 weeks or so of collective bargaining negotiations, the parties were able to reach an agreement on every issue except the pension plan, where the company was seeking its termination, and the AFA insisted and firmly believed, that this company can afford the pension plan. Those were positions. In order to try to reach an accommodation, a settlement of that one issue, the parties agreed to set aside the next 3 months of January, February, and March to basically work on that issue to see if they could come to an agreement. Barring the agreement, we understood that the company would file for 1113 relief, again, filed a motion. Negotiations were ensued, and the hearing was then scheduled for May at Guaranty Corporation.
Now, so they reached a disagreement. So there's separate negotiations going on.
Yes, there are different themselves. Parallel negotiations, which I will speak to later, is absolutely mutually exclusive. Exclusive bargaining, which is the right of the union, from the other labor law that has been passed by Congress.
So, but there hasn't the Supreme Court stated, and I quote, it has never been supposed that one party could preclude other parties from settling their own disputes and thereby withdrawing from litigation. Isn't the AFA attempting to prevent the PBGC from exercising its regulatory authority pursuant to 1367 and making arrangements with a plan sponsor who may become liable?
The issue here is United's conduct. We are not here on what PBGC's authority may be. The issue here is whether or not the employer in this case is should be allowed to negotiate with a third party, whether it be the PBGC or any other entity, for the purpose of to cause the termination of a pension plan. This employer has other obligations that stand apart from and remain freestanding from those that PBGC may otherwise have.
Well, what provision in the bankruptcy code bars a debtor from consulting with a regulatory agency about the proper exercise of its statutory responsibility and bars such an agreement?
Your Honor, there's nothing we believe that we could say that the United cannot speak to an agency. I think that that's completely different than what we have here. We have been in contract negotiating and contracting with another party over a term of agreement that is contained in the collective bargaining agreement, that is subject to the Royal Labor, that is subject to 1113, that is subject to 441 of ERISA. They are bound by all of those provisions, and that is what bars them from entering into an agreement, negotiations, and agreement to call the termination of our pension plan.
You're saying, though, that you're alleging basically bad faith bargaining, but it's not illegal. And I think each court below has noted that.
Well, Your Honor, I think it's very much illegal. Illegal. Absolutely cannot be reconciled.
So you just have to go to the lower courts?
Oh, absolutely. I think the lower court will pay due deference to the statutes that bind the Employer Administration United Airlines.
So what about Section 1303 that gives AFA the right to bring PBGC into court and challenge the propriety of a determination that the pension should be terminated? Isn't that a way where the flight attendant's legal rights could be reviewed by the court?
Absolutely not.
Yes, depending on where you are.
Well, we have two proceedings. We have a challenge for PBGC's conduct. And it only relates to PBGC's conduct. The district court will not review the negotiations by United. It will not review United's conduct as it pertains to 1113 or the Federal Labor Act.
You're talking about the D.C. district?
That's right. So the 1303 action is very, very circumscribed. And we will never have our rights affirmed or the ability to assert our rights, because they cannot be distinguished, other than if we are allowed to litigate, as we were about to, the day after the bankruptcy court approved this agreement. That is what we were entitled to under the law. Now, I think it's a bit of a commitment that we were talking about this. The first issue that we raised, I think, is of some importance here, is whether or not that a court can approve a settlement agreement when one of the parties or one of the parties to the settled litigation is not a party to the settlement agreement. I think this court explicitly and importantly answered that question in Vogel v. Zell. It said that two parties can't extinguish the claim of the third party not including either of them. That is precisely what has happened here. United has agreed that the interest of the litigation underlying this agreement, that this agreement has settled, is the 1113 litigation. They have admitted that the parties to that litigation, they've recognized that the parties to that litigation were AFA, the PBGC, and themselves. Now, what should be noted is that this court, only 2 months ago, on May 24th, in a decision involving the independent fishery services, expressly held that the legally protected interests that are at issue in the 113C are fully represented by the PVTC, the employer, labor, and management. Legally protected interests. That's what we have, and that has been extinguished. And that's why we're devoted to zealous reasoning and holding that this settlement in and of itself, for that reason alone, has to be set aside. Now, the second issue is what is at stake here? What are the legally protected interests that we're talking about? We're talking about the fundamental bedrock principles of labor relations. We can start with what the employee is providing under the Labor Act, 1113 and 1441. We can talk about from there what are the employer's concomitant duties. This is a two-part relationship. And every employee, one of the employees have, and the unions that represent them, there's a concomitant duty of the employer. And then finally, we have not only that, but in this situation, you have very distinct judicial processes that an employer must abide by if it is going to ensure the working conditions of employees that are represented by the union and covered by a collective bargaining agreement.
And do you think 1342 only provides that bypass?
Yes, we do. That's not this case.
Well, there isn't, but that seems to be what has happened based on what you're complaining about, is that there is a route through 1342 that enables the AL and the guaranteed corporation to follow this procedure and ostensibly at least to preserve some pension benefit as opposed to going on with litigation that may cause it to dissipate. I don't know all the details that you do, but it does seem to me that that's what the pattern was followed.
Well, let me just try to answer that question in two parts. First, that is not this case. This case precedes 4042 exercised by the PPTC. What this case is about is what was the status of the relationship of the law and the parties on the date the court approved this agreement.
And you're basically saying, I guess, the fact that one has already been started, you can't have this parallel, or even a parallel, but other course of action initiated.
But if you wanted, there was a simple avenue that they could have pursued. They could have said, no, obviously, we can recognize that the union is a necessary partner. We can't settle and terminate a plan out from under them. We should bring them in and have negotiations and try to reach consensual agreement among the three parties. That is precisely what happened in the TWA case. And there's no cite in the TWA case, there was an agreement with all the unions, among the employer, among the UGC, as to how to avoid termination of the pension plan. We were not given that opportunity. We were told that every deal was done, sorry, but we're ready to close. You've got it. 1113 is over for you. And so is your exclusive bargaining representation. Now, the question that has to be asked here is, how could this happen? How under the law, where the law is so clear and the dictates are so explicit, how could this kind of agreement pass muster? Well, the only way it can pass muster, we would submit, is if there are several suppositions that the company has made, if they are accepted. And those suppositions have absolutely no bearing, resembling in no way what the law provides. Now, the first is that the standing agreement, there's no general duty to negotiate with the union over pension termination. We may be saved. And what they say is that unless there's an 113 petition filed by then, there's no other bargaining obligation. It would be as if, under their rule, the union would go off if they filed for 1113 because in its absence we have no collective bargaining rights. Also, this court, 4 years ago, in the Elgin case, case, which we cited in the brief, established that bargaining over a pension plan is a mandatory subject of bargaining. That was established 40 years ago. And here they're saying, okay, with no obligation.
So what did the law under the PBGC do to change that, or did they? Because this is, it seems to be this subsequent act of Congress to protect pensions and to bail them out or do whatever it's intended to do, gives some authority that seems to at least sidestep, if not override, these other provisions.
Well, I think the PBG's authority does not cancel the employer's duties. That's what has to be understood. Those duties to the union stand apart from what the PBGC can do. Otherwise, what effectively is happening is that ERISA is repealing by implication all the rights and duties, the rights of employees and the duties of the employer, because they have the authority to reach agreements with an employer.
And you're saying in the settlement agreement, it's settled that the plan was terminated, that it doesn't require any kind of independent review by PBGC, even though the language of the agreement talks about if and when the PBGC decides to terminate the plan.
Your Honor, we think that even assuming that that were the case.
That is the language in the settlement.
I understand. When they entered into this agreement for an express purpose,
I understand you're saying that's the goal, and that was the motivation, but the language of the agreement talks about if and when, doesn't it?
Well, they're recognizing that the PBGC would still use another step that would have to take place. Now, the company, obviously, when it presented this agreement...
And when that other step takes place, AFA would have an opportunity to be heard.
But not with regard to the employer, not with regard to what the employer has extinguished. And the fact is that there is no doubt, and it cannot be disputed, that United set in motion the termination of our pension plan. And that but for this agreement, we would have gone forward with the right 13 union, our right would have been kept in place, and we would have our day in the world. We would have fine with that. And so, whether or not, and as it turns out, of course, the PBGC has terminated our plan. We have not, as a result of this agreement.
And you haven't had any opportunity to challenge that other than in this litigation?
That's correct, Your Honor. I mean, this is our opportunity to try and get back to the position we should have been in on May 11th. Rather than having all the rights extinguished.
You can't achieve that in the 1303 action.
No, we're not going to have 1113. 1303 changes still our 1113. It can't even restore 1331.
But doesn't 1303 give you the right to challenge the propriety of the PCBG's regulatory decision to terminate?
On a hard time and a precious basis, Your Honor. A standard far, far different than whether a change to terminate is necessary in the organization of the United Airlines as provided for under 1113, or whether it is essential that is but for termination of a pension plan, the United may not be able to reorganize the standard established in 1441.
Well, I'm hoping on rebuttal time. I understand,
Your Honor. I'd like to reserve as much time as I have left, whatever is left.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Dimitriev, are you next?
Yes. Good morning, Your Honor. Alex Dimitriev on behalf of United Airlines. The settlement agreement at issue on this appeal did not extinguish any rights of the AFA whatsoever. Any right that the AFA has to challenge the propriety of the involuntary termination decided upon by the PBGC according to its own processes, according to the standards of ERISA, are fully intact and preserved, and the AFA is pursuing them even as we speak in Washington, D.C., unfettered by the settlement agreement.
They say that's not as expansive as you just described. They don't have the opportunity to do all of that under 1303.
Well, Your Honor, what Mr. Clayton is saying is they don't have the right to allege a violation of the 1113 process or a failure to comply with the voluntary distress termination proceedings. But that's not what the PBGC did, which I'd like to get to next. Because what the PBGC did, clear as a bell, was involuntarily terminate the plan pursuant to Section 4042. Now, as Judge Favell found in the opinion that we have cited for you, there's no question that that's what the PBGC did pursuant to a settlement agreement as authorized by Section 1367. However, with respect to the rights that Mr. Clayman's talking about, if the district court in the District of Columbia finds that the plan was not properly terminated by the PBGC, and we're back to a point where United has to reinitiate the 1113 process and initiate a voluntary distress termination process, the AFA will retain every single right it had as of the time the settlement agreement was entered into.
That will be determined by the D.C. District Court at this point, which denied the preliminary injunction.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it an arbitrary and capricious standard of review?
Yes, Your Honor. It's a deferential standard of review pursuant to the PBGC's statutory authority. That's the decision that Congress made when the PBGC exercises its rights as the pension plan watchdog of this country to involuntarily terminate pension plans. Now, if the D.C. Circuit vacates that termination and the PBGC, and we're back at square one, and the PBGC doesn't take other action and United is forced to revisit the process, again, the point is that every single right the AFA had remains intact. Absolutely nothing has been settled. The right the PBGC is claiming has been taken away is the right not to be subject to an involuntary termination of its pension plan by the PBGC. There is simply no such right under the law. The lower courts correctly noted that there's absolutely no rule of law anyplace that says that once United started down the path of a voluntary termination pursuant to 1341 and 1113, that the pension plan then could not be terminated by any means other than seeing through that process to its conclusion.
So it's your position that we should just ignore the fact that this 1113 motion was filed the day before trial, and that's when the settlement with the PGBC took place? I mean, isn't that some evidence, strong evidence, that this is a voluntary termination case within the gambit of 1341?
Absolutely not, Your Honor, and here's why. There is absolutely nothing about the bankruptcy code or the RLA that prevents a debtor, while it is pursuing a voluntary distress termination under 1341, from also consulting with and negotiating with the PBGC in an area that's indisputably within its statutory authority about the alternative of an involuntary distress termination. And the timing of the settlement agreement, Your Honor, simply reflects the reality in all litigation in bankruptcy court, just like everywhere else, that the closer you get to trial, the more likely it is that people are going to start reaching settlement agreements because that's when they count.
Well,
that's all you can draw from there.
Well, doesn't a settlement agreement undermine Congress's purpose in enacting Title IV, which was to ensure that employees and their beneficiaries would not be deprived of retirement benefits by premature termination of pensions before sufficient funds had been accumulated in the plan?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't, and here's why. And you have to look to the agreement itself, which answers that question. And there's two provisions that are relevant. Paragraph 4 of the agreement simply provides that the PBGC is going to initiate its process, the PBG staff, to evaluate whether to involuntarily terminate the plan. Nothing more, nothing less. And that's why the agreement specifically talks about if and when the PBGC makes that determination. Those determinations by the PBGC are part and parcel of the authority that Congress gave the PBGC, and they're consistent with the goal that Your Honor just articulated, because the PBGC has to be able to act in the overall interest of the pension plan system to make sure that this plan, by being allowed to continue, doesn't unduly burden the system. So, yes, there is a protection for pension plan participants here against premature termination, and that's the fact that the PBGC by itself, according to its own processes, is the agency that's going to make that decision. And what makes that very clear, Your Honor, that that's all that was happening here and nothing more and nothing less, is paragraph 16. Because paragraph 16 outlines the conditions subsequent for the agreement to remain in force. And paragraph 16, in contrast to paragraph 4, makes it very clear that insofar as pension plan termination, the condition subsequent was termination, not involuntary termination by the PBGC. That's one way to satisfy it, but it could also be satisfied by voluntary termination, which means that had the PBGC staff said, you know what, an involuntary termination isn't warranted under our circumstances and we're not going to do it, United says, for the reasons that we've been stating publicly and privately to the AFA and others for months, we have to go ahead. United wins that procedure. The plan's voluntarily terminated. The agreement remains in full force and effect, and the PBGC is entitled to every single cent of the consideration that it would have received for in connection with an involuntary termination. The point of what I'm saying, there is absolutely no economic incentive whatsoever for the PBGC to issue an involuntary termination rather than a voluntary termination. The benefits it stood to gain under the agreement were exactly the same under either scenario.
Let me ask you this. Have other courts addressed the question presented here of whether the PBGC can reach a settlement agreement with a debtor prior to making an independent cause determination and without one of the critical parties?
I'm sorry, without
one of the critical parties.
Well, Your Honor, I think that, yes, the precise factual circumstances here, no. Comparable circumstances whose logical conclusion leads to the answer that's permissible, yes. And that's the Jones and Laughlin case, and that's Allied Pilots versus PBGC case.
Those are the closest. You cited those in your brief. That's the closest you can get.
And that's the closest we can get, Your Honor, but it's awfully close, because the point of Jones and Laughlin is that a pension plan sponsor, consistent with its obligations, can enter into agreements with the PBGC and agree with the PBGC to an involuntary termination, notwithstanding the fact that there are collective bargaining agreements out there. I mean, remember in Jones and Laughlin, the difference between Jones and Laughlin in this case is that the debtor, Jones and Laughlin, never started the 1113 process. It just went right straight to the PBGC. And the Second Circuit said that was okay. Now, 1367, Mr. Clayton keeps saying, it's not the PBGC's conduct or powers that are at issue in this case, it's United's conduct. With all respect, you cannot analyze or evaluate United's conduct in this case without taking into account the PBGC's authority under the ERISA statute. Section 1367, unequivocally and without reservation, says the PBGC can make arrangements with sponsors who are or may become liable on such terms as the PBGC deems equitable and appropriate. In a variety of situations in life, my mom always told me, it takes two to tango. And what that means in this situation is that without a corresponding ability of pension plan sponsors to also negotiate and enter into agreements when they are or may become liable, Section 1367 becomes a complete nullity. What good is the PBGC's right, as provided by Congress, to negotiate with pension plan sponsors if pension plan sponsors can't negotiate with them? We're not arguing arguing for an implied repeal of the general collective bargaining obligations and the collective general obligations that we have under the RLA. What we're saying forthrightly in our papers, and what we said forthrightly to the courts below, is that in this particular circumstance, the PBGC's authority over this area, including the right to negotiate with pension plan sponsors, is an exception to the rule.
Is the PBGC the so-called elephant in the room where it can do what it necessary to, to preserve the pension and the rest it can? Can it override everything else? It seems that it has maybe the power to go forward, ostensibly at least, to preserve what it can of the pension that might otherwise fail or become described a deficient pension.
Yes, Your Honor, the scheme of ERISA squarely vests the PBGC with very broad authority here to manage the pension plan system in the interest of all pension plan participants, in the interest of pension plan sponsors who are paying premiums, and for taxpayers. And when United negotiated with the PBGC in this particular case, it was negotiating with the PBGC not as a substitute representative of the flight attendants. We were negotiating with the PBGC in its capacity as the congressionally appointed watchdog over this system.
So what input did the AFA have into the PBGC proceeding?
Well, Your Honor, I think...
when they were making that determination, which, as you pointed out, statutorily they're bound to do. Once the agreement was there, what input did the AFA have?
Into the involuntary termination proceeding?
Yes.
Well, I think let's step back a second, because I think that in terms of perspective, I think it's important to note that the AFA, the PBGC, and United had exhaustively addressed pension issues in a variety of contexts. And there was massive discovery and disclosure of financial information about the wherewithal of the pension plans leading into this.
Which was all available to the PBGC.
Absolutely.
When they made its determination.
Absolutely.
So the whole picture was there. I'm trying to, because the AFA is saying they're really at a disadvantage because under this involuntary termination proceeding, they've got an arbitrary and capricious standard versus the standard that would be applied for review in 1341.
But, Your Honor, even if that's true, let's go back to the statute. That's the process that Congress has in place. Any disadvantage that the AFA claims to be suffering by virtue of the fact that they're operating under a 1342 standard as opposed to a 1341 standard is by virtue of the fact that Congress has decided that when the PBGC deems it necessary to involuntarily terminate a plan, that's the standard they operate under. The AFA doesn't, again, there's no right not to have the PBGC exercise its authority. And that's all that the settlement agreed calls for. Nothing more, nothing less. Judge Mann, when you asked a question about the PBGC, it really brings to mind the question you asked earlier. This case most certainly is squarely about whether 1342 provides an alternative route for a pension plan termination under the circumstances such as those that are in this larger case. And Mr. Klayman's answer lays bare, as Judge Weedoff recognized, as Judge Duryagin recognized, and as Judge Chauvel recognized, that the AFA's complaint here isn't with United, it isn't with the PBGC, it's not with the settlement agreement, it's with the ERISA system. Now, if that's really an issue, it's a big if, but if that's really an issue, that's an issue not for this court. That's an issue for the Congress of the United States and the President.
So that your term will expire, that you're in the program.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, I forgot. You got two fries over here. Is nothing? Nothing?
Good morning. Shannon Navy on behalf of the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. I think I'd like to follow up on some of the points that the court was asking about and that Mr. Dmitriev was addressing. And it does seem that the critical point here is that PBGC does have authority under Section 1342 to terminate a pension plan whenever it decides that it is in the agency's interest to do that and that the statutory factors under 1342 have been met. And there's nothing about the agreement that gave PBGC the right to do that, and there's nothing about the agreement that converted PBGC's initiation of a proceeding under 1342 into a proceeding under 1341.
Can you just quickly say how the agency's interests might be unique from the parties, the union, the company? You have an overriding purpose, and maybe just explain why maybe you have the ability to step in here and do something maybe either side wouldn't want to do.
Sure. As the regulator and guarantor with responsibility for the pension insurance system as a whole, PBGC has a duty and a responsibility to evaluate the conditions of pension plans and plan sponsors for the benefit of all pension plan participants, not participants in any one particular plan. And when PBGC makes a determination that its losses, you know, may be increasing as a plan continues, then it is incumbent upon the agency to take action to put a stop to those losses, particularly in the environment that we're facing today, where the agency is facing a deficit in excess of $22 billion for the payment of pension benefits to participants. So, I think that in making the contract bar in Section 1113 basically irrelevant to section to proceedings under Section 1342, Congress recognized that the agency's purposes in the continued payment of benefits to plan participants and the maintenance of low premiums to sort of prevent other healthy sponsors from fleeing the system were important purposes that the agency should be protecting.
In terms of what the agency had to review at the time it made the decision to involuntarily terminate, do you agree with counsel in terms of the kind of record that was available to PBGC?
Yes, Your Honor. PBGC...
Specifically in terms of AFA and their rights. And their position, that is.
Yes, the PBGC has been an active participant in the bankruptcy. It should come as no surprise to anyone that it was carefully evaluating the position of all of United's pension plans, throughout the course of the proceedings and looking at them on an ongoing basis. It's a very fluid situation. One need only look at the price of fuel to know that conditions were rapidly changing for United and for the viability of the plans. And PBGC, reviewed the 12 volumes of an administrative, there's 12 volumes of an administrative record that was before PBGC in making its determination to terminate the flight attendants plan, and that's what's being reviewed in the district court in D.C.
And that review is an arbitrary and capricious, isn't it?
It is indeed, and again, that is what the statute provides for, and that is to allow PBGC to.
And of course, AFA has a voice in that proceeding.
It does, and it's
to represent it, I mean, more than a voice.
Yes. I guess the one other point is that the AFA's contention that PBGC would not have initiated termination proceedings but for This agreement is pure speculation. So is the statement made earlier here this morning that, you know, if this court were to reverse the agreement, that PBGC would be likely to restore the plan.
What about this issue of timing, that it happened one day before the trial was set up for the 11-13 proceeding?
I think that Mr. Dmitriev is correct that as people get close to trial, they are more apt to settle issues. This settlement settled a whole host of issues between the agency and United, based on, you know, at least on our part, the agency's evaluation of what its chances were for maintaining the plan. There's nothing else.
Okay, thank you. Okay, now, Mr. Coleman, you've got a couple minutes.
Thank you.
Just a few points, if I may. With regard to an issue of consent, we're in a position that an employer that's bound by a collective bargaining agreement is restrained by that agreement and doesn't get absolution from the PBGC's power when it asks for consent. Of course, the employer can only grant consent if it's not otherwise constrained to do so. In fact, that is the position the employer took in the PBGC versus Heppenstall. The employer there said, well, we can't grant consent because we're restrained by a collective bargaining agreement. Secondly, I think the impact of the position that's being taken here today is quite astounding, because what should be realized, two things. This would apply outside of bankruptcy as much as inside of bankruptcy. Employers are now lying down by 4041, which was specifically tailored for them. Instead, they would go to move the PBGC and try to induce them to start the involuntary termination process, as exactly happened here. And employers are not military unions. Employers are not bound by their collective bargaining agreements. Instead, there will be a third way, not involving the union, for an employer to achieve termination of the pension plan that Congress never contemplated, especially in light of the specific amendments that were passed in 1985. The other thing that's going on here, if you take it to its logical extreme, a union could enter into an agreement with an employer that said specifically the employer shall not enter into any agreements with Rule 1367 with the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation unless the union agrees. Position of the company? Sorry, as a part of the bargaining agreement, we don't have to abide by that. That has no bearing upon us. Just as what the document said, our contract said, the company believes that the benefits provided in the retirement plan will not be reduced without the pilot agreement of the union. That same provision has the same effect as this, and it is easy to overrule under their theory of the law. Absolutely appropriate. There's a collective bargaining agreement that binds two parties, and the two parties have to adhere to it regardless of whatever power someone else may have.
Oops.
Am I done?
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. This case will be taken under advisement.